Oh, good day. Didn't see you there. I was just busy dusting off the old arrow shelf. Welcome to Hunter Looks at the Movies. Master Hunter will be with us momentarily. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go finish putting his Criterion collection in order of spine number. Good day.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Hunter Looks at the Movies.
So, I know that this show has been a meme on Midnight Movie Cowboys for a while. Just me coming on and talking about whatever movie I saw recently, or something art house and pretentious, but I've actually considered doing it, you know, and here I am finally doing it. I just wanted some sort of platform to talk about a movie I wouldn't otherwise be able to do on the show, that maybe John and Stuart wouldn't be interested in, or just a movie I have to get my thoughts out on for whatever reason, because it's burning up, and I'm too lazy to write articles these days. I'd rather just get it out and talk about it and practice talking by myself, because I never do podcasts alone, and I think there's a reason for that, because I'm horrible at it, but I'm gonna try anyway with this platform. So this is not an official episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. It's Hunter Looks at the Movies. Just keep that in mind. Maybe I'll do more of them, who knows. We've had some aborted sideshows in the past, but maybe this will be a good one to just, you know, throw up on the feed every now and then. Get some content out there. Make the feed a little more active than just once a week, you know? Anyway, for this week, the movie I wanted to talk about is the first movie I've seen in the theater this year. Actually, I take that back. The first movie I saw in the theater this year was Silence, and that's a film called Bitter Harvest. The film is directed by George Mendeluk, who the only thing I've heard of that he's done is the Lonesome Dove TV series. And the guy has done a lot of TV stuff, episodes of Highlander and Miami Vice and all sorts of stuff. So he's been around a while. And Bitter Harvest, it stars a guy named Max Irons. This name, excuse me, is pretty tough to pronounce. Anurin Barnard. Samantha Barks. It's got Barry Pepper, Terrence Stamp, and an MMC favorite, Richard Brake, who you may remember as the very stupid clown villain from Rob Zombie's 31. What caught my eye for this movie, I didn't even see a trailer for it. I just saw it was playing at the theater near my house. I was trying to figure out a movie to go see with a lady, and a film that's like a love story that takes place during the Holodomor. The Holodomor is not a subject that comes up a lot in films, because it's sort of an interesting little forgotten chapter in 20th century European history. So here's a little history lesson for you. I'm going to read a passage from Martin Sixsmith's book, Russia, A 1,000-Year Chronicle of the Wild East. Between 2 and 4 million people died in the Holodomor, the great famine that swept through the Ukraine, in 1932 and 1933. At the very time Soviet cinema was turning out films about singing peasants dancing through the golden wheat fields, cases of cannibalism were being reported throughout the republic. Moscow suppressed all information about the famine for 50 years, but the British diplomat Gareth Jones bore witness to the misery and death it inflicted. Quote, "This ruin I saw in its grim reality. I tramped through the villages in the snow of March. I saw children with swollen bellies. I slept in peasants' huts, and I talked to every peasant I met. I walked alone through the villages and 12 collective farms. Everywhere there was the cry, 'There is no bread. We are dying.' This cry came to me from every part of Russia. In a train, a communist denied to me that there was a famine. I flung into the spittoon a crust of bread I had been eating. The peasant fished it out and ravenously ate it. I threw the orange peel into the spittoon. The peasant again grabbed it and devoured it. The communists subsided," end quote. Shamefully, there was no shortage of Western luminaries willing to swallow Moscow's propaganda that the garden was rosy, and any suggestions to the contrary were anti-Soviet slander. Jones, whose reports were ridiculed as lies and falsification, was furious that Western visitors to Russia allowed themselves to be taken in by the Soviet PR campaign. Quote, "After Stalin, the most hated man in Russia is Bernard Shaw. To many of those who can read and have read his descriptions of plentiful food in their starving land, the future is blacker than the present. There's insufficient seed. Many of the peasants are too weak to work the land. In short, the government's policy of collectivization and the peasants' resistance to it have brought Russia to the worst catastrophe since the famine of 1921 swept away the population of whole districts. Today, the famine is everywhere. End quote. As well as George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, and Beatrice Webb, and Walter Duranty of the New York Times accepted and propagated the Kremlin's lies. Gareth Jones was murdered in Mongolia 2 years later in circumstances that have never been properly explained. Even more chillingly, it appears that Stalin deliberately worsened the famine by withholding vital supplies from allegedly anti-Soviet areas in Ukraine. In the center of Kiev, in a prominent position beside St. Michael's Monastery, a display of 6-foot billboards catches the eye of visitors and passers-by. Erected in 2006 during the presidency of the nationalist president Viktor Yushchenko, they bear a text in Ukrainian and English headed Holodomor, genocide against the Ukrainian people. Disturbing photographs of skeletal children and corpses lying in rows outside of Ukrainian peasant huts are accompanied by a commentary that leaves little doubt about whom Ukrainian nationalists hold responsible for the famine. Recent scholarship has suggested that the accusations against Stalin and his colleagues do have some truth to them. It is, for instance, undeniable that Ukrainian communists had warned Stalin that famine was looming. Roman Terekov, the party secretary in Kharkiv, wrote the Soviet leader to ask for urgent measures to be taken. But Stalin replied, "I see you are a good storyteller. You seem to have invented this tale about a famine to try to frighten us. But I tell you, it won't work." All right, I'm going to stop it there. But that's from the book Russia, A Thousand-Year Chronicle of the Wild East by Martin Sixsmith. And if you ever want kind of a very readable primer of Russian history, that is a good one to get. It's a very breezy read. It's a fairly thick tome, but it's kind of a good overview of Russian history, and you can kind of find out which parts you find interesting, and you can kind of go from there in terms of what you want to focus on in your studies of Russian history. But anyway, back to the movie Bitter Harvest. So the movie caught my eye because it took place during that time period, which, you know, is not something you hear a lot about. So I thought it could be pretty fertile ground for the possibility of a film. And so when we went to see it, it started off pretty good. You see Ukrainian peasants in the fields working, and, you know, there's lots of singing and Russian Orthodox ceremony, and everything's good. And it seems like it's going to be a good movie. Then you see Barry Pepper. And Barry Pepper in this movie, you may remember him as the sniper from Saving Private Ryan. He looks more ridiculous in this movie than in Battlefield Earth. He looks like an old guy in a really bad Viking folk metal band. His hair is just terrible. It's like a fashy hairdo on acid and crack and angel dust. It's utterly laughable. Like, it's almost hard not to start laughing at the film at this point. And this is where the tone of the movie just starts to really go all over the place. Bitter Harvest, it's supposed to be a love story. However, when the lovers in the film are separated, I don't feel the gulf that you should feel between separated lovers in a love story. And that's probably because I felt nothing during their courtship. It just sort of felt like a given from the word go that they were going to be together because the script says they should, and that they're going to be sad when they're apart because the script says they should. The movie also has an action element to it, and all the action scenes are very cheesy and very silly. They have really stiff, terrible dialogue. There's a scene with Terrence Stamp and Barry Pepper where they fight this, these NKVD soldiers, and they announce that we are free men. You know, it's got really cheesy lines like that before they get in these really stupid Hollywood action scenes that are just, they feel like they're in the wrong movie. They feel like a really bad direct-to-video type stunts. The movie also peppers in a lot of history. Early on, you get Stalin in Moscow talking about how he wants to punish the Ukraine, but then that stuff is dropped. It feels like it's there just to provide context to what's going on. Okay, but this movie's also kind of like a Holocaust movie. You know, it's a movie portraying a time of great suffering that's done by, at the hands of the state. right? Well, I didn't feel the suffering that much in this movie either. It seems to be I'm supposed to feel it because the script says there's suffering going on, so therefore I should be feeling the plight of these people. But a lot of the starving peasants, they look like healthy people with ghoul makeup on. You don't get the feeling you get from something like Schindler's List, which is very effective at, you know, making you sympathize with the people being tortured in the concentration camps. When people are really starving, they take on sort of a otherworldly nature. They look like monsters. They look like really pathetic, like ghouls. And you don't really see that in this movie. You don't really feel the suffering that Stalin is causing. But I will say there is a very effective little part of the movie that I liked. And one of the pieces of the movie is the NKVD coming to the small town that the characters are from in the Ukraine and forcing Soviet revolution onto them and, you know, taking their grain and blah, blah, blah. But one of the things they want is their icons. There's this icon in the village of St. Yuri. And I don't know anything about St. Yuri. I think I'm more knowledgeable on religion than the average person. However, Russian Orthodox saints and icons are pretty foreign to me. I don't really know a lot about it. If I did, that would make me a really terrible hipster. Apparently joining the Russian Orthodox Church is this thing that hipsters do. And if it's not part of your culture, just please don't do that. It's silly and it's LARPing and just stop. Anyway, so there's this icon of Saint Yuri that they really want. And it's a very important piece of the culture to their village and their people. Well, there's Jackie. It's a very important piece of the history and the culture to these people. And the Soviet government is very keen on trying to take it away. It may seem silly to most people. Why do they want this painting of this saint? I mean, it's just colors on wood. Who cares, right? Like the girl I saw the movie with, when I said I like this part, she said, it's just a painting. You know, what's the big deal? But it's their culture. It's their local culture. It's something that is very important to their lives and their prayers and everything. And so one thing that the Soviet Union and the left in general does is they try to destroy these sorts of local cultures. They try to stomp out these sorts of traditional enclaves and replace it with a universal culture that's easy to control. It's easier to control people if they're homogenized and the same. And that's something that we kind of see with what's going on today, but they've taken a different route of it instead of doing it through NKVD soldiers taking your grain and burning down your churches. And they instead do it through mass media. But anyway, that's another thing. Paul Joseph Watson's going to be showing up on the show soon, I think, with this tangent I've gone on. So let's get back to the movie. What I thought was profound about that was that it showed how the left is very bent on destroying local culture and taking that away and trying to replace it with something else and how desperate they were to do that. And I think that the way the characters fight really hard to preserve this little icon of St. Yuri was kind of a nice little point that they put in there. And I thought it was a nice bit of poetry in a movie that is full of really bad writing, really stiff acting, not very compelling plot points. In fact, the ending is totally unsatisfying. It kind of leaves it open-ended, but not in a way that makes you think or makes you kind of long for an answer or think about it. It just kind of makes you go, huh, that's it. Okay. All right. It feels like a TV movie. It really does. It doesn't feel like great cinema at all. And it's really a shame because this is such an interesting piece of history and a film like this may be people's first exposure to it. And I wish it was more compelling because I would want people to look this stuff up. Movies that get into really interesting bits of history, they make you want to read more about it, at least if you're an intellectually curious person. And this should be one of those movies. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to have that effect. A good movie on the Holodomor has yet to be made. I think out of 10, I would give it like a 4, maybe being generous. It had that a few little things here and there that I liked, but overall, it's all over the place. It's a mess. It's just It's just not the movie that this event deserves. So, great movie on that has yet to be made. Take note and somebody go make it. That's about all I have to say on Bitter Harvest. Not really recommended. And that's going to wrap it up, I think, for this first episode of Hunter Looks at the Movies. If you have any thoughts on this movie, if you've seen it, or if you have any thoughts on this show in general, head over to the Facebook page, Midnight Movie Cowboys Facebook page, and join. Get in on the discussion there. You can always comment on the show page on the blog where this episode is posted, at midnightmoviecowboys.com. And if you want to support the show, you can go to iTunes, rate and review us. Or if you're feeling generous, go to midnightmoviecowboys.com, see that PayPal button, click donate, give however much you can afford to give. So I think that's about it for today, and I'm going to sign off. Hunter Looks at the Movies. Adios.